podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to the 5-year plan interview series, monthly interview series, and this month it's a big one for our first interview of 2024. We've got Neil Warnock, and he was as excellent as you would imagine. Joining me on that day and today is Jack Pearce. Jack, happy new year. How are you?
Happy new year to you, Jim. Happy new year to listeners. Well, thank you. Really enjoyed this session with Neil, let's call it that. And it was lovely of the Peter Crouch podcast to warm him up for us as well, which was a nice part of the day. But I'm good, mate.
See, he did Crouchy first, and then he popped next door to see us, which I think is sort of the perfect 1-2. Speaking of a session with Neil, in fact, actually, before we even get into that, let's mention our sponsors. We're delighted as we head into the new year that we've still got our friends, Maternity Home Finance, on board for this interview series. Now, you may not know, but like a Liverpool player in the box, mortgage rates are falling down quickly. So it might be time to start looking at moving or getting on the property ladder. Talk to Josh and the team at Eternity Home Finance, who can help you with a free consultation. Simply email info@eternityhomefinance.com and quote the code FYP. Now, speaking of a session with Neil, he came on the pod today not just to tell us some fantastic stories from his time as Palace manager, as he did, but to talk about this live show he's doing. I think a tour of live shows next year, but the most local one for Palace fans is at AFC Wimbledon's Plough Lane, the new Plough Lane, or Cherry Red Record Stadium to some people, on Saturday, June the 8th. It's called Neil Warnock, Are You With Me? And you'll notice throughout the interview why it's called Are You With Me? And he'll be telling stories from down the years of all the teams he's managed, but I think particularly focusing on Palace, probably even QPR as well in this one. So Jack will be there for this live show, but I guess this episode is a little taster of what you can expect there. But we're definitely encouraging people to go along, buy a ticket now from gotoagig.com, but there's a link below in the show notes right now, because I think if you enjoy this episode, you're going to enjoy the live show 10 times more.
He's not sure of a story, is he? So I think he'll fill the evening with plenty of good stories and plenty of interesting chat about Palace. I've got to be honest. I thought, with the number of clubs that he's managed, but even since leaving Palace, even the second spell in 2014, I just presume like some of the stories might be a little bit diluted, really, in terms of his time at Palace. But his memory and his stories regarding Palace was really strong. It was a really fun hour or so with him, and I think if you like this interview with him, you'll definitely enjoy an evening with Neil next June.
Absolutely. So Neil Warnock, Are You With Me, at AFC Wimbledon, Saturday the 8th of June 2024. Tickets from gotoagig.com, but there's a link below right now in the show notes, so click on that, buy yourself a ticket. I'd imagine it's probably going to sell out quite quickly once this episode goes live, so if you fancy it and bring some mates, get a ticket now, and we will see you in June representing FYP.
Jim, I've got to be honest, I was not as quick as you as to why the show was titled that until the train home that evening. I kind of twigged then, so you were much more on the ball than I was.
Listeners, see if you can get it quicker than Jack did. Have a little listen out, and I suspect you might. But let us know.
If you don't get it quicker than I do, book an appointment with your GP. That's what I'd recommend.
Yeah, and then book a ticket to the show.
Yeah.
Well, look, here we are. Let's go straight into it. This is Neil Warnock on the FYP podcast. Some great stories. We probably only asked him 10% of the questions that we had lined up, and we could do more, and we might even get the chance to at the live show potentially in June. But for now, kicking off our interview series, our monthly interview series in 2024, it's the one and only Neil Warnock on the FYP podcast.
Yeah.
Welcome back to the 5-Year Plan podcast interview series sponsored by Eternity Home Finance. For a free consultation, email info at Eternity Home Finance and quote the code FYP. Now, joining us today is a man who managed 146 games for Palace across two spells, took us to a playoff semi-final, witnessed Freddie Sears' only goal for Palace, which didn't actually count, started Danny Butterfield up front because his wife dreamt he'd score a hat-trick, which he did, cut Darren Ambrose's toenails, and much, much more. And we're going to enjoy chatting to him, but we're going to enjoy it by being disciplined.
Correct, lads.
It's the one and only Neil Warnock. Neil, welcome to the podcast. Yeah, how are you?
All right, nice to see you.
Top, top, man. How are you doing?
Very good, yeah, very good. I'm enjoying a bit of time. I've just had a holiday, and one or two things. I like doing some things with the media, and I just try and make people smile, really.
Well, speaking of which, tell us about this live show you're doing at AFC Wimbledon, Saturday the 8th of June. What can people expect from this live show?
Well, I was just talking about my career, really, and different things, and London in particular. I mean, had a great time at Palace and QPR. You know, I was telling the lads the other day, when I first started in management, I didn't think I'd ever manage below Watford. I thought that was the pitch. You're never going to manage down there. And then Simon Jordan, you know, come and have a quick look and help me out. Just see what you think, Neil. I didn't think I was going to go as manager. When I left Sheffield United, I was going to retire then. And I ended up going down there, and he talked me into it. And I absolutely loved everybody. He was absolutely brilliant, Simon.
You will do well on a Palace podcast if you come on and call Watford the Pits. You'll do very, very well. That,
no, I said below Watford.
Oh, okay, yeah.
There might be a job coming up there anytime soon, actually.
There might be. Can we take you back before Palace? Back to 1st January 1992, because that was my first ever Palace game. Palace versus Notts County. Manager of Notts County at the time?
Wow, dear me. You've got a better memory than me. Don't forget, I'm 75. So, I've always enjoyed... Palace is a special place, really. The fans, the way they get... The noise. Can't tell you what it's like walking out as the manager and then walking down to the touch to the bench, going past everybody, you know. You're dying to look and clap, but you think, keep your head down. It's always been a special place. I've been very lucky in London with QPR and Palace because they're what they call Neil Warnock's type of clubs, aren't they? You know, the fans they work hard for the money. That it's their day out, Palace, and it means everything to them. And QPR was the same. So I never thought I would, like I said earlier, but I lived at Beckenham with Palace. I loved getting on a train at Beckenham, and I'm Covent Garden within half an hour. I've got that many CDs from these musicians. I've got my own collection now.
You're a busker's friend.
Yeah, busker's friend. Yeah.
Tell us what is so special about Selhurst Park? Is it that it's one of these old style grounds and a bit like Loftus Road, that's sort of boxy and the fans are on top rather than these kind of new bowl shape?
I think so, and I think whatever the team is, I think Palace have always got a chance at home because I think it's. I remember Man City coming to Palace. They brought two coach loads of staff. And I remember going down the tunnel and they were all like this down the tunnel. They couldn't move because the Palace dressing room was so small. And I kept thinking, welcome there, you know. I hope we chucked a bucket of water on floor as well, but we didn't. So it's just, like you say, it's really good atmosphere. I've always liked clubs like that where the fans are close to the touchline and that, have you? It just seems to bring the best out of me. And I think the players respond as well. And I enjoyed all my time down there.
Jack's got a question in a minute about how the move to Palace went about, but just one more. When you are close to the touchline, have you had any fans, interactions with any fans during games or anything? Maybe not just the Palace. But...
Oh, I mean, crikey, you get that all the time, don't you? You know, over the years, it started off where I used to get a lot of stick, and then latter end of my career now, although they're giving me stick or whatever, it's quite humorous, really, and I don't mind that. I was telling the story about when we played at Ipswich, Portsmouth, places like that always love going there. And Ipswich, we were losing 1-0, and I remember the crowd chanting, you know, behind the goal, Warnock, Warnock, what's the score, you know. So I go 1-0, but then I went, you know, pointed to me watch. And we equalised in 90th minute or 85th minute, something like that. So, of course, I goes on the pitch and I'm on halfway line. I'm going, 1-1, you know. Centre-half come up, nearly chinned me. He thought, you know, and the I goes in the press conference and the tabloid, the red paper, the Daily Mirror, I said to him, are you from the Daily Mirror by any chance? He went, yes, oh yeah. I said, oh, I thought you might be. He said to me, Neil, what about your two-finger salute to the crowd? I said, hey, what are you talking about? Did you not see me?
Well, it was two fingers.
I know, but that's were their headlines. Yeah. Are you with me? Yeah. Two-finger salute to the crowd. Whereas when I went like that, on the Monday morning after that, by 12 o'clock, I think, the post, I was back at the ground. I had 33 letters and emails from Ipswich fans, everyone saying, Neil, forget that. We were really pleased what you did after the game and we loved it. Just wanted you to know we're not all like that, you know. All of them. And I replied to everyone.
Nice.
Every one of them letters I replied to it, or the emails. And that's, I like that banter. I like having a, yeah, listen, I'm going to get some stick, aren't I? But I think, you know, overall, fans have respected me as well through my career, really.
Neil, can I ask you, one of my memories of one of your Sheffield United teams coming to Selhurst was your promotion-winning season at Sheffield United. And it was the first time that season I thought that Palace, who I think a lot of people thought were favourites that season, having just been relegated and retaining Andy Johnson, and you came and played us off the park.
We did, played well.
You played really well that day, and you had Phil Jagielka playing in midfield.
Yeah.
As an opposition manager coming to Selhurst, did that bleed into you? And we'll come on to how you became Palace manager. No. But did that bleed into your decision as to taking the job when you did take it?
It was not really. I must say, not really. I enjoyed the games there. But it was Simon Jordan, really. He was just amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Even during my time at Palace, you know, I remember losing 4-0 at Scunthorpe, something like that. Going into
so do we.
Yeah. 3-0. And then going in the dressing room, and I'm saying to my assistant manager, listen, we've got to go now, haven't we? We can't carry on with that. You know, that, you know. So in my own mind, I thought, I've got to leave. Are you with me? Simon comes in, and you know, I said, I'm sorry, chairman, about that. Sorry. And I said, well, listen, it might be time. What are you talking about? He says, you're the best manager for this job. There's no way are you leaving. Now, that's what you need. That's when you talk about your chairman supporting you. Who supports the manager? Who motivates the manager? He was brilliant. And I never looked back, really. I enjoyed that. You know, we almost got to into the Premier League.
We did. But going back to 2007, you leave Sheffield United in that summer. You publicly put on the record that you'd like a break from the game. I think you might have even used the R word.
Yeah.
So how did Simon Jordan persuade you? I'm sure there's lots of stories about Simon Jordan.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe they're best saved for the live show. But in terms of that decision to join Palace, how did he sell the club to you?
He didn't say come and manage the team. He was clever, really. We got to know each other. When I was at Sheffield United, I was after Morrison.
Right, OK.
Right? And he was the chairman. And, of course, in the paper, I'm saying something, and they accused me of tapping the player up and everything. And we had a Barney. And when I went to Selhurst Park in the boardroom, he'd come to speak to me and, you know, and you know what he's like, Simon. But we had a great conversation. And I said to him, I never tapped him up. Yet the agents are ringing me. Can't wait to get away from you and all that lot, you know. And we had a really good barn, you know, like a heated relationship then. But I think we respected each other. So at the end, when I left Sheffield United, and I felt I got stitched up at Sheffield United as well. Wow. I'd been in the top flight. And he rang me to console me, and then he just threw in at the end, Neil, will you just come down and have a look at the club? Because they got the club, the manager had gone, well, will you have a look around at the club and tell me what you think, how we can improve things and things like that? So I said, yeah, if you want, Simon, I'll come. I'm not doing
like
it.
Like a mate.
Yeah. So I went down thinking I was going to look all around. Well, within 24 hours, Neil, you could do this job. You can do that. You can do this, Simon. And that's how it was, really.
The telephone salesman came out in him and
he's selling
the club.
Yeah, yeah.
Lovely. But that was Peter Taylor you took over from,
yeah.
Wasn't
it? Yeah, that's right, yeah.
And we'll come on to that that first season you had, because you had quite the impact.
Yeah.
What were your first thoughts about that squad when you joined?
I thought they were hard work. There were some hard workers in the squad. I thought they lacked a little bit of devilment, really. And it was just a matter of getting the best out of the group, really. I think man management, I've always said, when I look at all the modern managers with the clipboards and what have you, and all the data and everything they've got, you know, I think the few people forget that all my successes and the reason I've been in the game so long is that I think 90 to 95% of success is man management, getting the best out of what you've got.
Mm.
You know, you don't go into a club and I'm going to play this way. You go into a club, look at what you've got, and then decide how you're going to play. So, I mean, I was good. It was good at Palace. I love the goal. Julian Sperone. Oh. He was amazing, Julian.
What a man.
And one of the best gentlemen I've ever
absolutely
met.
Right. In my life.
Although when we came back with Sheffield United, we scored a great header to win the game, I think. I think we got above him and... I
don't remember that one, Neil. I don't remember that
might
one.
Might have been Cupiano. Yeah, it was.
It was Hyder Helgeson. Yeah, I could tell you about that one. I don't want to talk about that one. Say that for another day.
Speaking of characters, just go back to Clinton Morrison, because I know you've had a special relationship, still do.
Yeah.
All the great sketch recently for Sky Sports. Talk to us. We had Clinton on the podcast many times. What a guy he is. Talk to us a bit about your relationship with him.
Well, Clinton's one of them that... I always liked to know what my players were going to do, you know, when I was younger as a manager. And we came to Clinton, and he wasn't really a grafter. Clinton grafted when Clinton wanted to graft, but he could score goals. And so it was trying to get the best out of what he'd got. Are you with me?
Yeah.
And I think what he respected me, because I think I gave him the respect. And I think I dealt with him different to everybody else. And I think the other players know that. But I don't think they minded, because they knew if I could get a result from him, we were going to win games. So it was like a mutual thing. That, and we always had a laugh. And I think that's been the biggest, one of the biggest pluses for me, is trying to get my players. I remember Paddy McNair at Middlesbrough when I left. He rang me and said to me, Gaffer, can I just say... I've never looked forward to getting out of bed as much to come training as I have since you took over. And that, to me, is the best compliment. Are you with me? You know, having that smile and a laugh and enjoying it, knowing that they're going to die to get 3 points, you know.
The idea of, you know, being objecting to a clipboard, just the idea of you being kind of taken around a stationery shop and just the disdain you'd have a look at when it comes around to the clipboards. But that man management style was fundamental that season, because you got Clinton playing, but you put players around Clinton.
Yeah, but I think the crowd was instrumental as well. I like to talk to the crowd and I like to get them on board, and they got on board with me.
Yes.
And I felt like the whole place wanted me to do well. And home and away, you know, you got off the bus, they were all there waiting. And I made sure that, you know, make sure you sign 2 or 3 autographs before you get in the dressing room.
Yeah.
Because some of them have big headphones on and don't sign anything. I think... I wanted my lads to make sure they were part with the fans.
The personal touch.
Yeah, personal touch. And we did that. We got everybody back together. And
you turned the dial up, because we'd had a few, season and a half of Peter Taylor, and the football just was not especially exciting. But quite quickly, you turned up the tempo in terms of the players. And
yeah.
That January window, we had Clint Hill on a few episodes ago in this series of interviews, and he spoke glowingly about you, Neil, you'll be pleased to hear. And you brought him in, but you also brought Scott Sinclair in. And Scott Sinclair, and you introduced Victor Moses to the first team. So just very quickly, if you wouldn't mind just indulging us about that run to that playoff, because it was such an exciting time for us.
It was, yeah. And even now, I still think we should have got promoted.
We'll get on to...
We were the best.
We'll get on to Ashton Gate in a minute.
I know. we were the best team in the playoffs for me.
Yeah.
So that is one of my biggest disappointments, if I'm honest, especially with Simon. The way it ended for him as well.
Yeah, yeah.
That would have solved a lot of problems. But that just shows you how small amounts, thickness of a post, you know, that's football, isn't it, really? What if? But that season, I thought we played some cracking football.
Yeah. I mean,
we were on the front foot. We were entertaining. I mean, I've always wanted my wide players to attack, my strikers to get in, my midfielders to join in, win tackles, win headers. Get the crowd going. That's all been my philosophy. Are you with me?
Well, you had players that were playing at the top of their level. You know, you had Ben Watson playing incredible football. And Ben Watson was going to play Premier League football the following season, whether we went up or not. He was playing at such a good level. But I think the game that sticks out for me, and I think for many other Palace fans, is that last day of the season at home to Burnley.
Yeah.
And I know it was helped out by an early red card, but we played them off the park. It was a different score, wasn't it? It was sensational.
I mean, I thought that would have been a difficult game. I remember saying... On the Friday, when we were together in the staff room, and I remember saying, you know, I'm going to have to get myself wound up tomorrow because I don't feel the lads are, you know, on the top.
Yeah.
I said, and I don't want to be a damn squib. I don't want to end up, you know, putting a pin in a balloon. I want us to be on that front foot, you know. And I had to get myself going a bit more than normal then, especially the morning of the match. More or less give myself a talking to up here. And I came in and I was really positive and the lads were, and I had a laugh and a joke and went off into my own room. And, you know, I used to ask my staff what they liked today. What, you know, anybody head down or anybody, yeah. You know, now they're all, you know. And so it was a good preparation there. And like you said, we played brilliant that day.
Superb. Oh. Couldn't have gone into the playoffs any better.
No. Just, that's a really interesting point about sort of the psychology of a manager, because you obviously you're dealing with so many people and you have an image to, I guess, project onto the players. Hmm. So you're saying there about G'ing yourself up. If you're having days where you, as a man, a person, are feeling a bit flat, did you find you had to go into the ground or the training ground and G yourself up and be a different person for the players?
No, not really. I didn't have anything like that because what I did is I made sure I got away from football, whatever. Are you with me? Mm. I used to get on my bike and go cycling round, you know, Beckenham and round that area there, Plaster Training Ground. It was just, and you, sometimes you know when you've got to get your own mind in. I mean, people don't see that. You know, I go in the dressing room and I'll have a laugh and a joke and I'll see. If I think anybody's eyes are down, or if I see there's a problem or all like that, and then so I'll do that for 10 minutes before, you know, before the team sheets go in normally, but then when I go in my room, I sit down and go, are you with me?
Yeah.
It's like that's my work, that's my job. I want to get them on the peak, sort of thing. So it's not straightforward. It's not. I mean, everybody thinks it's a piece of cake. It isn't a piece of cake being a manager. But I mean, if you'd have told me when Simon asked me to go down, I'll end up with 1,627 games. I mean, I would have said no chance, you know. But good memories. Crystal Palace, good memories. You know, the training ground, it hadn't been finished then, you know. It was a bit of a mess. I remember saying to Gary, early doors, to Gary Izzet was the youth coach, and I pulled him over. I said, Gary, we haven't got much pace in the team, have we? Have you got any kids that can play? Any kids that got pace? He went, well, Sean Scannell's over there and Victor Moses, they're not bad. I said, well, are they good enough to play? Not yet. I don't think so. Not yet. So I said, well, get them over here. So they both come over. And Gary stood there. They both come over. And I said, lads, you've got a bit of pace between you, haven't you? Have you played yet? No. And Victor never said, you know, that's what Victor. And I said, well, I'm playing you Saturday. And Gary's looking at me. I've just told him he's not ready yet. I said, Gary says you're not ready yet, lads. But you're going to play Saturday. I want you to be yourself, run at them, have a go at them. Don't worry, blah, blah, blah. I can't remember who we were. And that's how that developed. And Victor Moses, one of the best stories of my career, that's Victor tough. Moses. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He was a frustrating. He got everything going for him, all the ability in the world, never bothered challenge, never tackled, never chased, thought he were too good for this, that and the other. Are you with me? And I remember thinking, what a waste. So I thought, right, I'm going to sort this out. We're playing Cardiff away, midweek, peeing down with rain. And I went on the pitch before the game, put my arm around Victor. I said, listen, Victor, tonight's the night. You've got to decide what your career, where it's going. Are you listening? He said, yeah. I said, right. Tonight, you either show me that you can get to the top or you're going to end up playing for Bromley. And that's no disrespect to Bromley, but they were the nearest club, non-league, that I could think of. I said, oh, you're going to end up playing for Bromley. I said, you've got to show, you've got to tackle, you've got to be more desire, you've got to want to do it more. Anyhow, 95 minutes later, we come off, we win the game, and I've got water coming down, he's absolutely bucketing. I put my arm around him, and I said, well, welcome, Victor. And I've got gooses talking about it. I always do. I always get gooses. I said, welcome. That's the first game of your career. That I said, you now know what's expected of you. that's the start of your career, son. There's no reason you can't do it now because you've just done it. So you now should go to the top. That's up to you. All right? Off you go. So then he gets transferred and he ends up Chelsea fullback, Victor, yeah, tackling. So then he goes to Nigeria, yeah? Yes. Then he goes to African Nations. He wins the player of the tournament at the African Nations. And I'm at home watching. And I text, I can't tell you what time of day it was, but within 5 minutes of the game, I text him, "Congratulations on your success. Can you remember Cardiff?" Right? Exclamation marks and a funny face. I'm telling you, within 5 minutes, and all what were going off at the Cup of Nations, he texts me back. Wow. Gaffer, I'll never forget Cardiff. Thank you.
Wow. Incredible talent, though.
Oh, God. That's amazing. Try. And I could, you know, I get gooses talking about that because people don't see that.
Yeah.
And that gave me more pride and satisfaction than I can tell you. Oh, and nobody sees all that.
You also put on a 17-year-old Sean Scannell, and he scored the winner in that game, the chip against Sheffield United.
He did that.
Is there a better feeling as a manager to you chucked a kid on and he scored the winner?
I know. And he's such a lovely lad and all, Sean. You know, I mean, they had a good, Gary Issett was a good coach, and I'm pleased that he's doing well again now. You know, it's just, sometimes you get feelings about players. I've been talking to another podcast over the last couple of weeks. We talked about Adel Chirab. Yeah. Are you with me at QPR? And he was bombed out when I went there. But you get feelings about players. And no matter what anybody tells you, you think you can do something with it. I'm not right all the time. I've made a few mistakes. But in that case with Victor and Sean, I didn't think there were anything to lose. Mm-hmm. We've got nothing to lose. We haven't got enough pace. We've got two young kids who wanted to give me everything. Fans were got behind them because the fans love their own. They love their own kids coming through.
Daniel Kleine, another one who you put.
Yeah, Kleine. Yeah. I mean, Kleine.
Who 15 years later we're still talking mother. About him.
Yes. I remember speaking to his mother, a lovely woman. Now, I don't know, when we went into administration, you know, at the end, I remember Dave Moss, who was the coach then of the youth, pulling me in. The administrator from Leeds, can't remember his bloody name.
Brendan Guilford.
Correct, that's him.
Good.
So he told me.
Never forgot.
Right, so he told me, Brendan.
Your friend Brendan.
Yeah, he told me that I would have to sell Kleine to pay the wages. And if I didn't sell him to Wolves, I think
as
it was.
Yeah.
If I didn't sell him to Wolves for 500 grand, then couldn't pay the wages. So he didn't tell me. He had Nathaniel in his office with Dave Moss and Brendan, and they told the kid, "You'll have to go to Wolves because we can't pay the wage bill."
Wow.
So you've got to go to Wolves 500. So he come in my office, Kleine, and said to me, "Gaffer, they've just told me I've got to go." I said, "Nathaniel, you don't go anywhere." Mm. I said, "Your career, you need to get 1,500 games playing for Palace. That'll get you career. What they're telling you, they want you to go because they can't sort it out. But that shouldn't be anything to do with you." Mm. And I remember telling his mother the same. His mother was a lovely woman. And he said, I'm telling you now, don't worry about what they're saying to you. I'm telling you now, you haven't got to go anywhere. You concentrate on it, Crystal Palace. Just tell them you've decided you don't want to leave, if that's the case. Because that's not going to be good for you.
Well,
and it was the best thing that he could have done.
It's a lot to ask a young person, given the responsibility of the fact that
said,
no one else can get their
to live in Wolverhampton.
Yeah, they don't get
really
paid. It's absolutely diabolical.
Well,
he
ended up going for five times the amount of that just a year later.
He did.
Ask a quick question about youth team players. Hilda, you blooded a lot of young players into the team. And a lot of Palace fans, so in the last 10 years have been in the Premier League, a lot of Palace fans would like to see more young players given opportunities. But surely it's harder in the Premier League to give young players opportunities. Is that a naive?
No, it's the truth. Yeah. No, it's the truth. I mean, it's so difficult. I mean, you've been lucky, really. You've had more than most clubs coming through. You know, you look at some of the young lads that have come through. You've you've made good sales, haven't you, really? And I'm sure you're going to do again, unfortunately.
Yeah, come on now.
In the next couple of years. So it's you know, I think you've done better than most clubs regarding bringing them through and selling them on. But, you know, that it happens at clubs like Palace because they aren't the Manchester City and Uniteds of this world. I remember when I came back the second time to Palace, I remember I signed Zaha.
You did?
I signed Zaha and nobody bothered, you know. And I said to him, I remember having him in the office at Steve Parish's and saying, listen, this is your place. Come back and enjoy yourself and relax and, you know, all the fans love you. Be yourself. I said, what did Ferguson's, how did he coach? How did he say things? He said to me, I've never spoke to him since I've been there.
Yeah, well,
he'd never spoke to the manager.
He had the unbelievable misfortune of being signed by Alex Ferguson, but never playing for him.
Never played,
that
never
whole,
spoke
that transition
to
of Moyes into him. And
I know.
A really unfortunate move for Wilf. But we're very grateful you did what you did, Neil, to get him back.
I know. So really, I made a few quid for Palace, didn't I, over the years, really.
We will come on to it, but that window, because that you were with us for 7 days, I think, of that transfer window, because Tony Pulis left in the dead of night and you came in and steered the ship for half that season. We've just interviewed James McArthur. You also bought James McArthur in that seven-day window. So quite the seven-day window
for
Palace.
I've got to say, James McArthur, bloody hell. Steve Parish at the time, right? Steve didn't want to sign him on the wages. And he kept chipping him down and chipping. And they kept driving round Beckenham.
They kept driving. It was deadline day.
Oh, God, aye. Yeah. And I says to him, you've got to trust me. We need another, you know. I mean, we battled over peanuts. And I think we ended up asking the player to take a little drop in the end to come so that I've got some leeway to go back to Steve. And he ended up signing. And I often think, how many years has McArthur been a fantastic player?
8 years of incredible service.
You know, Zaha coming back, you know, playing the young lads.
We won't talk about Kevin Doyle, though.
They could have got on their bike around Beckenham as
well. They could have done. Well, you could have lent them
to be fair, I've never been any good at strikers. When you look at my career, I've had some right. Oh, my goodness. I've had good goalies and good centre-halves and not bad midfield, but I've never done well with strikers.
Should we use that as a link to come on to a certain striker?
Go on.
By the name of Frederick Sears.
Oh, yes.
I think you know what we're going with. We've actually had a question from a listener, from a Mr. R. Shoebridge of Derby, who says, are you still angry at me? Am I forgiven for not giving?
He's the referee, isn't he?
He was the referee that day.
I know. And never forget the name.
No, clearly not.
No, never forget the name.
What do you remember?
I mean, that? I just couldn't believe how three of them couldn't see it. Me. But I remember walking across to Gary Johnson, and we're not on Christmas card lists. I remember going to him and saying, surely you've got to pull your lads back. You know it's a goal. So, and I said, well, I'll tell you now. It'll all backfire on you. In the end, you'll get a bullet here now and it serves you right. And all that, like it did.
And then you sent a card. Because we obviously had the history with Ashton Gate as well. Because the playoff semi was, 12 months after? Or 12 months before that goal. Yeah. So the fact it was Bristol City just hurt even more.
Something about Bristol City.
At that time.
It was.
They were kind of that era's Watford.
Yeah, they were.
They were that era's Watford. Now we have this weird rivalry with Watford. But what do you remember? Because Freddie Sears... It was an exciting loan signing. The previous season, he scored goals for West Ham in the Premier League.
Yeah.
It was a bit of a coup to get him.
Yeah.
Do you think that moment, if it had counted as it should have done, would have been the turning point for...
Sliding doors moment.
Yeah, a bit of a sliding doors moment for Freddie Sears. Did you have high hopes for him?
Absolutely, yeah. I felt sorry for... I mean, he... What a lovely lad as well. Mm. I mean, normally, you've got something wrong. You know, there's something you can... But you couldn't criticise Freddie. Manager's dream. He trained hard, played hard, always wanted in training everything, 100 mile an hour... and he took his goal well.
It's a lovely finish.
But and I still can't see it now. The three people, I mean, everybody knew it was a goal. All the fans knew it were a goal. I still don't understand how it happened. So, no, I don't forgive Shoebridge.
You can hear that.
On Bristol City, because we had the Battle of Ashton Gate in the semi-final. There was that game with the goal. Feels like there was a few others in the league as well. Were they as a fan, it felt like a nasty place to go.
Mm.
Were they as nasty sort of on the pitch to play against?
Not really. I've always enjoyed Bristol City. You know, I mean, I'm managing at Cardiff, where it's a local derby. I've always loved it. Are you with me? My first game at Cardiff, was on television against Bristol City. And my new signing, Saul Bamba, scored the winner that night. So I've always had, you know, I've had a good relationship. I mean, I'll have a go at the fans. They'll have a go at me. Are you with me? And I'll show my bottom and things like that to them. But it's always been in respectful. I think we've got a mutual... You know, I've always wished I could have managed at Bristol City. It's one of them clubs.
Still time, Neil.
You know, and I spoke to Steve, the owner, a few times. I know it's his son now. But because it's my kind of club again. The fans are really hostile and good and get behind.
Jack will come in a minute to another very famous moment. But you've definitely, I think, of all the managers that have managed in the last 20 years or so, managed to build up that respect, I think, from fans of almost every club. Is that an intentional thing? Or that's just kind of who you are? Because I think most fans... Yeah. I mean, you've managed a fair few of them, but I think most fans, most clubs sort of respect who you are and what you do.
I think what's changed in the last 10 or 15 years, there's so many fans that say to me, which is a compliment, I didn't like you, Warnock, before you come here, but I'm glad you're here. And I think that's about as big a compliment as you can get, isn't it? When they've been, I don't like you, Warnock, but, you know.
You're one of ours now, Neil.
Yeah, so I got a few London accents saying that. And I think that's a compliment, really, because I think, I tell you what, there's not many clubs that I've been to that I haven't left in a better situation than when I went in. And I think that's all you can do as a player. I think I helped Palace out. You know, even when I went back second time, I did feel as if I was stitched up at the end. I know Steve, he did it for the, you know, he looked to look after the club. I was disappointed in him because we were not in trouble. And like I say, I thought we could go on in second half of the season. I thought I deserved better than that. But listen, all managers, nobody likes getting the bullet, do they? But I thought after coming back and helping him out, I deserved a little bit longer than that. But hey, that's life.
Can we just dial back to what was perhaps one of my favourite nights under the Selhurst lights, Danny Butterfield's hat-trick against Wolves in the Cup replay. Yeah. We had Danny on, he did a live show with us two years ago.
Have you?
Great night.
Yeah.
He told some stories that, unfortunately, due to legal reasons, we can't repeat on this podcast with you. But great night. But he talked about that, hat-trick, and obviously stands out for him in his career. He was a right back. I don't know how many goals he scored in total in his career, but I think a high proportion came that night.
When I told him where I was playing him, I think he was gobsmacked.
Is the dream story true?
It is, yeah.
Go on, give us the details of that morning into that night.
Yeah, my missus just come up with it. I've dreamt Danny Butterfield scored a hat-trick. I said, what, did you have a bloody nightmare, darling, or what, you know? And she said, I woke up thinking. So anyhow, a long story short. So we go in and we had a few problems that night. If you look at the injuries, we had a few injuries that night. But in training, you know, like goalkeepers always think they're centre forwards. Fullbacks always think they're attackers. You know, you've got that. Danny always liked to push on and play and go, and because he got that movement and everything. So, you know, it never worried me about playing him further forward. And we were struggling, and I thought, I can't remember, who was it against?
Wolves.
Was it Wolves?
Isn't it a full?
And I think they were a bit regimental at the back. And I remember saying to my assistant, I'm going to play Danny Butterfield at front. I didn't tell my assistant, because Sharon's dreamt he's going to get a trick. I thought, I can't tell him that, or he'll think I've gone daft. Can't it? So I pulled Danny across and I said, listen, Danny, I'm playing you up front. Just run about, enjoy it, be yourself, like you are in training. Every day when he played up front, he was always buzzing in training. And I said, just enjoy yourself.
Running off Alan Lee.
And they weren't bad goals, you know.
Oh, no, they were bad.
Well, technically, the perfect hat trick.
Yeah. I mean, they were good goals. And I'll never forget the third one. He come across and give me a massive kiss. And I went the third one. None of us could believe it. We all jumped up and hugged each other.
Well, I remember Sean Derry just laughing.
Yeah.
Just laughing.
Because I think I told him what had happened. Oh, Danny had told him. I think I said, I don't know, I think I told Danny that my missus had dreamt you've got a hat trick. But I think he thought I was just taking the mickey. Are you in?
I can't remember which game you... Was it Scunthorpe away?
So we then played Scunthorpe away.
And you did it again?
Yeah.
It was not as good.
Hooked a half-time.
Yeah, it was not as good.
My memory.
It was not as good. But can we just quickly touch on that cup run? Because it was a difficult time for the club. you know, we kind of bypassed the whole Newcastle plane situation, the Nathaniel Klein reference you made, but we did have to sell Victor Moses in that window. But that cup run kept us going in many ways. So great night for many cult reasons in terms of that hat trick and Danny Butterfield. But the money that we got from that
generated,
and then we had Villa at home. A few weeks later, on Valentine's Day, I seem to remember.
Good crowds, weren't they?
Great crowds. Yeah. Was there more pressure in that cup run because of the financial, I guess, complexity of the situation?
Not really. I mean, I think Simon knew that, you know, I was just doing everything I could to generate whatever we could, really. It was just nice. It was just, I mean, it's just special at night. I love the floodlights at Selhurst Park. And it is a special place when you get in, when that place is buzzing. And, you know, the lot behind the goal. I don't even know what they call that stand behind the goal. Come on.
The home stand. Home stand.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I just used to think, bloody look at them. Listening. And they were chucking it, peeing it down with rain. And they stood there getting wet through, singing away. You know, it's great for a manager to have that support. And even when we had difficult times, they never really got on my back. I was quite pleased with
it. Go on, Jim.
Can I just go back to the Butterfield? I've just been thinking. When you got home that night...
He loves Danny Butterfield so much.
I love Danny Butterfield.
So much.
I text him regularly. He doesn't often reply. When you got home that night, was Sharon like...
No.
I told you.
And she probably didn't even know the result. Sharon. But no...
She's getting director of football queries from other clubs on the continent.
I know. We just said, don't tell anybody. Don't tell anybody. I tell you, it's all my idea. Don't tell them about you. I think it was a few years before I told anybody after that.
Well, Danny's now going on the circuit telling everyone the story.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what about that spell in general? Was that one of the more difficult times in your managerial career with the club facing the difficulties it was?
Yeah. I mean, the Newcastle thing, crikey, we were on the plane when I was told.
Started the flight in 7th, finished it in 21st.
Yeah, I know. And, you know, we got there, we get on the bus, and the driver, you know, obviously he'd heard it. We're all sat on the bus, and the driver could, can I have a word, Gaffer? Boss, can I have a word, boss? Yeah, of course you can. So I go down the front of the bus. He says, I can't take you to the ground. I said, what do you mean? He says, nobody's going to pay unless you can pay. I can't take you to the ground. I'm thinking, we've got a bloody game to play.
Top of the table.
And we can't go in a bus. How can we go in taxis? So, anyhow, it goes back. I can't remember. Who were my assistant then? I've got that.
Were you Mick?
Is it Mick Jones?
Mick.
Yeah. Yeah. So I said to Mick, when we were talking, I said, hey, listen, Mick, we've got a bit of a problem here. He said, you know, we've gone under. I said, we're going to be deducted points. I said, but he won't take bus. So Mick said, well, Gaffer, have you got your card on you? So I went back to the bus. I said, hey, listen, I've got my card on. Can you take it? So I said, well, I'll have to ring office. So he had to ring office, get my card, take the money and make sure it come out before he'd drive the bus.
Well, there's a Geordie bus driver telling a very good story in many Newcastle pubs that he once had to take a car payment from Neil Warnock to get a team there.
I know.
Difficult time, isn't it? Because no one knows when they're getting paid, a lot of uncertainty, fans aren't sure what's happening. It must be harder then, during the week and on the weekend, to try and get the players to focus.
Absolutely, yeah. And I felt sorry for Simon. I think he's always felt a little bit, he never says too much, but... I think he felt a little bit stitched up how it all ended as well, but we're not going to that on this. So it was difficult for him because I knew him as a chairman and an owner, but as a friend as well. Are you with me? And so all I could do then was try and do my best. It was funny because Brendan, the administrator,
your friend Brendan,
gave me a letter saying I could go. Right?
Really?
Yeah. So. I thought, that'll do me, if that's the case. So, because I told Simon. He went, you what? He said, so he went back in and saw Brendan and said, are you joking? Well, we can, you know, Pete Clubs would buy him, you know, put into the administration. You're talking about shorter money and you've told him that, you know, can going to cancel his contract. So, but before I knew, I'd got another letter from Brendan saying we've had a rethink and we'd like you to continue, blah blah blah. And they got 500 grand from QPR for me. But Brendan would just give me away, you know.
Can we talk about the QPR move? Because it was a difficult time. We had Clint Hill on, as we talked about, and he talked about it. He's very open about the end of that season and going into the game at Hillsborough, which we'll also come on to, because we'd like to get your thoughts as a Sheffield United fan more than anything about that day. In terms of him ending that match, he knew that was his last game for Palace. He had to look after himself, was out of contract. With the QPR move, and to be reminded, the QPR were also in that part of the league at the time.
Yeah, struggling, weren't they?
How did that move come about, and how difficult was it to make that decision, given the spell you'd had at the club and your connection with Simon Jordan, but also the playing squad, who was very much your playing squad?
I just think that unless you've actually been in that situation, I don't think you can understand, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'd got the letters anyhow from Brendan, more or less telling me he didn't want me anyhow. So I knew I hadn't got a future. Mm-hmm. So, I thought, all right, I've got another letter a week later saying I'm going to be kept on and all that lot, which obviously he realised he'd made a mistake. So I always knew, I'm on my way out.
Yeah.
Whoever it is, they're trying to get me out, first off. So I spoke to Gianni Palladini.
Yeah.
And he talked to me about the job. And I said, well, if you can agree with Palace, I'll come to you, And that's how it come. It didn't take long for with Brendan. Brendan would have took 2 and 6. He'd have took 2 and 6. Owed money him for me. And in the end, he got 500 grand, I think, from him.
Did you bring QPR back to Celeste that season? Did we play QPR?
Yes, I think we did.
I think
in the penultimate
we did, because we beat you. That was good.
Neil Dance got sent off.
No, that was West Brom.
I think that was, what's his name, up front? Elgerson.
Was that the 2-1?
Scored the winner. I think he got above Verona last
minute. I recall that we played you towards the end of that season, then very early on in the following season.
Yeah.
And Edgar Davids set you up.
No, it was at the end of the season, that one of them, because we still weren't safe.
Yeah. So you needed the points as well?
Yeah, we needed points.
How weird a day was that, coming back to Selhurst so soon after?
Strange, yeah. Really strange. Bloody hell. But I made sure the lads knew how important it was, eh, with me. And I got a great reception from the Palace.
Yeah, yeah.
Got a great reception. So it's always emotional like that when you go back to a place. I mean, I've had a few of them. I've had a few going back and what have you. But it wasn't the easiest, really, because you didn't want to inflict anything else, but you wanted to win for your own, for your own team's good. Sorry, Paul.
No, sorry.
But we played ever so well.
Yeah.
That year. We deserved to win that day.
Go on, Chip.
I was going to say, but the Hillsborough game, when Palace went to Hillsborough, it was your squad. Did you have one eye on the result as it was unfolding, given it was against Wednesday as well, and it would have been Wednesday going down if Palace stayed up?
Yeah, I think I did, yeah. You know, because there's no way you want your I don't think you do anyhow, to go down. So he was always looking at the results. I mean, you do, don't you, everywhere you go, really.
Must take you a while on a Saturday evening, actually, Neil, to look through the former club's list.
My first, I look at Truro because I know the manager. then Gainsborough Trinity, then Scarborough, Athletic now.
Yes.
So I look at all them first.
Phoenix Club.
Before I get into League One.
That last day of the season, stay up, and Jim and I were talking a few days ago. We suspect you might have raised 2 glasses that night, because not only did Palace stay up, but we did send the Owls down, which in your house was a good result.
Very good, yeah. I mean, I've spoke to him recently about taking the job on, but that didn't materialise. That would have been... it never bothered me Wednesday. I've always thought, a good rapport with their fans. I know a lot of their fans would have wanted me as well. Are you with me? But it's that day, I didn't want Palace to go down.
No.
I didn't want Palace to go down. So it couldn't have worked out better.
Jim's spoken to most of that squad now, haven't you?
We've had a lot of that squad on the podcast. Yeah.
And if you have Alessandro Ndiaye's phone number, we'll take it off you tonight, actually. He's the only one, I think, that we've not spoken to. Yeah.
But they were a real squad of characters. I mean, you talked about characters earlier, but that helps a lot.
Yeah.
there were some special guys there, weren't there? Leaders.
I think everywhere. Really, I think I said earlier that I've had 8 promotions, but do you know, none of them teams were ever the best teams in the league, but they were all special. What I like about my teams is when they have reunions, it's as if they've never been away from each other. And I can sit at the back of a room and watch all the different parts of that team get together. And it's just like going back in time. The pride I get from looking at that group, because I know they will take that forever in their life. Are you with me? And that's what I love. I love the fans, the 8 promotions, you know, where the fans will never forget those times as well. And it's good. I think I love to try and put smiles on people's faces and what have you. And I've done that really all my career. And yes, I've had downs as well, but, you know, I like to think that I've had a lot more ups than downs.
And Darren Ambrose that season obviously had the best manicured feet in the championship.
Yeah, Darren. I heard him on TalkSport a while ago talking about, because I always pick a favourite.
We've heard.
You know, wherever I am, and Darren was my favourite, you know. So if it was raining, I'd have a brolly and say, come under here, Darren, come under here, son. I don't want you to get wet. This lot can get wet. I'm not bothered about it. Do you want some chewing gum, Darren? You know.
And here's a fiver, Darren.
And he couldn't believe it, because he's a quiet lad, Darren. He was. But because I know it sounds silly, I think he got the best out of him.
Did you sign him?
Because he was my favourite.
Did you sign him?
I can't remember. I
think you did.
Start that season.
Was that his first season with us?
I think that was from where?
From Charlton.
From Charlton.
A free transfer.
Yeah, yeah.
How good was he that season? Did he exceed your expectations?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he was just a manager's dream. And does anything you say, worked hard. For a forward player, he didn't shirk a tackle.
Yeah.
And he just a lovely lad as well, which helps. So he just fitted in really good with the lads we got, you know. And you look at some of them characters in that team. You won't want to, you know. I think that the biggest compliment for me over my career is when I always said to teams the pre-season, you know, have a look at that league table, and you ask all them managers in that league table who you don't want to play against. I bet you I'm top of league. You know, and that's what my teams are. Are you with me? You don't want to play against us. You know, that's what I've always sort of prided myself in, really.
I think Darren told us, or someone, that when he went to training versus their Palace, he was like, they're wearing shin
pads.
Training. Oh my God, who are these people?
Yeah, it was always the first 2 sessions, whether pre-season or when I took over. And within half an hour, I bet you're 90% I've made a judgment on players. I'm not always right. Obviously, you give them longer, but 90%, you know, anybody pull the head away from a header or pulled out of a tackle or things like that, I'd just mark my card and what have you. But Darren were right. There were some tackles flying in that day. And poor old Darren only just come to the club. He must have wondered what were happening.
But I can't imagine there are many players in that squad that would be pulling out of tackles or pulling out of headers. I think there were leaders across the pitch.
Yeah.
Everyone, that starting 11 at Hillsborough in particular, if you think of what was
you
on the line
money
that
on
day.
Them, wouldn't you?
Yeah. Yeah,
and it was the way that game fell. Hillsborough, which I think was the biggest stadium in the league in terms of capacity, you have to go there to secure a point against them to prevent them going. It's just everything is written. It's like a Hollywood script. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Obviously, you then took Clint Hill and Sean on with QPR, and they've both spoken to promotion the following season.
Following season,
unbelievable.
Yeah,
congratulations for that now.
They couldn't believe it when I told them I was going to make a Delta Rab captain, Sean Derry and Clint Hill. I say, trust me, lads, you'll get you into Premier League, then that you'll get new contracts.
Well, that's how football works, I guess.
And he did.
Sean's doing great.
Hey, but I've got to say, the QPR fans thought I were an absolute idiot of a manager. I remember on the forums, Sean Derry, Clint Hill, what's he doing, a retirement home or what? Are we playing in a retirement or?
Well, can we ask maybe one that you tried for and maybe didn't get? And you mentioned him earlier on in the episode, but did you try for Julian Speroni as well that summer?
Oh, yeah.
And do you think it was his loyalty to Palace that prevented that?
He's just such a gentleman, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Julian. I mean, he was short of an inch or two, wasn't he, height-wise? But, oh, my God.
Yeah.
Dressing room as well. He's just an amazing person.
Yeah.
Oh, and if I saw him today, he'd be exactly the same. We'd just have a huddle and, you know, and one of the best people I've ever met.
Really?
Julian, yeah.
I think he's missed the Crystal Palace, I think, really.
I keep meaning to think, I think he's got a restaurant on it somewhere. Did he used to have it?
In Purley.
All right. I kept meaning to go and have a look.
But I'm sure he's the type of guy that if you called him, he'd probably cook you something and bring you around.
He would have.
Should we come forward to 2014 then?
Yes.
Returning to the club, Palace have been in the Premier League for one season at that point.
Yeah.
How did that come about?
Well, I think you were really struggling.
Pulis had gone in the night before the season started.
And, I mean, there couldn't be a worse time, really, to leave. You know, you've done all pre-season and everything, and then that happened. And I think I rang Steve up and just said to him, you know, you need somebody to steady the ship. I think, I can't remember, there was somebody else on the shortlist.
So I interviewed Tony Popovich in Australia a couple of years ago, and the club had actually even reached out to him. He was, I think, in charge of a Japanese club, had just won the Asian Champions League. Mm. And he was having conversations, but it wasn't the right time for him because he didn't want to leave the club that he was at.
Yeah.
I just didn't think they could lose. I said this too, because I love the club.
Yeah.
And I said to Steve, look, I'll come and get the fans on our side again and give you six... You know, I did say, give you a time to find your own manager for the future. Are you with me?
Who had you just left? Had you just been with the club?
I can't remember. No, I know. I've been somewhere. Probably, I don't. That's up to you to do your own work.
Gainsborough Trinity, was it? Just
Probably Leeds. Yeah.
But you offered your services and it was taken up.
Yeah, to Steve, and I said to him, you know, you can't lose on it, Steve. I said, I'll get the fans on side. It'll give you time to work things out, and it did.
Yeah.
Really, I mean, I was. Like I said, disappointed when it happened at that time. That's what chairmen look after their own money, don't they?
So. And he has proved time after time. He makes the decision at the time that he thinks is right, with other decisions. He backs himself up with those. I mean, I think going back to that August when you got appointed, there were murmurs of Alan Pardew at that point. And then Pardew was the appointment after you were dismissed around Christmas time. Yeah. So maybe his situation at Newcastle changed, I don't know.
I don't think we'll go into that. Because, I mean, it happens in football. It's happened to me at Middlesbrough when somebody came in and, I knew about 2 months before. Are you with me?
Yeah.
And same just happened at Sheffield United, same person. So these things happen, don't they?
Is it quite a lonely position to be in as a manager when that kind of thing's happening? Or maybe,
it's disappointing. Yeah.
You got your assistants maybe that follow you around, but you're kind of on your own, aren't you?
Yeah, you are. And it is. Listen, can't say that I'm innocent in looking at when I've been coming for jobs and things, because you do talk, your agents talk, you talk, they might ring you up and things like that. I just think there's a way of going about it, really. And it's so horrible when you know somebody's talking to them 6-7 weeks before it happens. It's hard to work in them circumstances. Are you with me? Mm. But it happens, and that's not going to change.
The last game, Southampton at home, I think, on Boxing Day or just after Christmas. Difficult game. How quickly after that game were you having conversations with the manager?
Can't remember.
With the chairman?
Can't remember, if I'm honest, no. All I know is I couldn't believe the timing because it was QPR, and I thought we'd win that game.
Yeah.
Difficult spell, but two great results
that stand out.
A 3-2 win away at Goodison. Against a very good Everton team, who I think the season before had been very close to Champions League football. Yannick Bolasie, Fraser Campbell scoring a magic header, and then Milay Jedinak.
How was the first game? Was that the second game of the season?
No. It was very early on.
Had we not got beaten by Bolton Wanderers or somewhere?
I can't remember. I remember it was just after... I think it was the first time I seen James McArthur. No, we'd drawn at home to Burnley, 0-0.
0-0, that's
and
right.
And Julian...
Yeah, Newcastle game.
Newcastle was your first game.
Equalised in the last minute.
Yes, and you did a lovely jig on the touchline when that one went in. That one must have felt quite nice.
I just think the Everton. I think it just showed us we could compete.
Yeah.
At that level, you know.
You talked earlier about central midfielders, and you had Milay Jedinak, James McArthur, who you'd brought in, and Joe Ledley, who you became known as McJedley.
Mr. Steady Eddie.
And that midfield was really important. Scott down at the back, Damien Delaney, you were still playing. And it felt like you'd had a good core to that team. It was just at the top of the pitch where we were struggling a little bit more. But a few months later, 3-1 at home to Liverpool. What are your memories of that? That's a great standout result for Palace fans.
I thought we played super that night. The atmosphere, wasn't it? I mean, even, you know, like a couple of weeks ago when you played Liverpool.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking back to that night, and it's not easy for them coming to Selhurst Park, you know, is it? And, you know, I mean, for dear, you're unlucky, weren't you?
We don't want to talk about that, Neil. It's a tough afternoon. And so we have contacted Mr. R. Shoebridge for his comments about that game as well. But
that was, I mean, that was a super night. The Liverpool game, that was probably as good a night as I've ever had.
Oh, amazing!
That, yeah, really.
Did you know Mele was going to take that free kick?
No. Yeah, because I did. I told him.
Sharon didn't.
I just think the whole place is geared up for nights like that, isn't it? Really, nothing surprises me.
Just a couple of characters I'd just like to touch on. I appreciate we need to wrap up soon, but the players that you had in that second spell, players that you didn't have in the first spell, players like Mele Jedinak. How did they strike you as
steady? I just thought he was a good pro, mate. He was never he was always a 6 or 7. He never a 9 and never a 5. That's how I class him, you know. And I thought, you know, McCarthy, same. Are you with me? Always a good manager. First on team sheet. Mm. You knew what you were going to get with him. You know, really, I'm really pleased how he did. I spoke to him quite over the years while he was here. You know, because he knew how difficult it was to get him signed. If I had just dug me, you know, my heels in, he would not have signed for us. You know, Steve was adamant he didn't want to sign him. I could tell. But what a good servant he was for 100%. The club.
We're going to wrap up in a minute. It's been an absolute joy talking to you. Can we get your thoughts on Roy Hodgson, who's obviously back, like you, returned to Palace?
He's an old bugger, isn't he? Really?
You can say that because you're 3 years younger.
I can.
Just your thoughts on Roy and where Palace are at the moment.
I think we just Roy and myself and that we just miss the game so much when we're not involved, and there's no replica for that. There's nothing you can get like when the whistle goes and you've got a result and you know everybody's going to go home happy. And he's been unlucky with injuries and things like that, hasn't he, Roy? And he never moaned. I mean, fortunately this year, there's two or three bad sides, isn't there? So it's not going to be a normal year.
Yeah.
I mean, when I was at Sheffield United, we had 38 points and got relegated with the Tevez thing.
Yeah.
I mean, 38 points, you're probably in Europe this year. You know, it's changed a lot, hasn't it, really? But Roy, I think Roy's steady at it. But, it wouldn't surprise me if Steve picked a manager before the end of the season, and I don't think Roy would mind that if it was the right way forward. Because, you know, Roy will see that, you know, like myself, you're not a long-term plan. But I think it's good to get sometimes an old head. You know, I think the young lads, you know, like you've got a lot of young lads, haven't you? I think Roy is the type to put their arm around them and tell them to go and enjoy it. And whereas, you know, there's a lot of sort of data-based talking by younger managers and things, and then all these videos that they have to watch. Whereas Roy's the old-fashioned, you know, and I think he gets the best out of him and me. So I think he'll do all right this season and enjoy it, and quite rightly so. And I think the fans, you know, they always get behind whoever's manager, don't they, really?
Neil, it's been an absolute joy talking to you. A quick reminder then, Neil Warnock, Are You With Me? That's the name of the show.
It is.
Saturday the 8th of June, 2024, 3 till 6pm at AFC Wimbledon's Plough Lane. Tickets are at gotoagig.com. There's a link in the show notes now. So you can buy a ticket. We've got to get people down there. It's going to be a great show.
It is. I enjoy talk. I mean, you know what I'm like. You can't shut me up, can you? But when I'm talking about something, then something else crops up in my mind. Another story, and I come out with that. So it's amazing what memories I have. And I'm looking forward to some of these shows, because it's nice to sit back. I still get butterflies with the shows. Before I go on, are you with me?
Yeah.
And, you know, that's the nearest I've ever been to actually managing when I do these shows. But it's great to make people laugh. And they all have their own memories. You know, they'll have people that will come, they'll remember Freddie Sears' goal going in, won't they? And one of my best memories, should I keep that?
I was going to say.
No, I might keep that for the show. Remind me about one of the Bristol City games, will you?
Okay.
In the show.
Jack and I will be there. We encourage our listeners to get down as well. I think Mr. Shoebridge is maybe blacklisted from being at the show. But everyone else, get yourself down there. Neil, it's been a pleasure having you on. We'll see you in June. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Well, there you go. Neil Warnock, what a man, on the FYP Podcast monthly interview series sponsored by Eternity Home Finance. Email info@eternityhomefinance.com and quote the code FYP for a free consultation. If you enjoyed that, you will love Neil Warnock, Are You With Me? The live show at AFC Wimbledon's Plough Lane on Saturday, June the 8th, 2024. Tickets are available right now from gotoagig.com or click on the link in the show notes below this episode on whatever podcast app you are listening to this episode on. Jack, right at the end there, Neil was about to break into a Palace story. He stopped himself and said, I'll save that for a live show, which is a perfect way to end the episode and I think the perfect teaser for all our listeners to get themselves a ticket.
I was just thinking as well, as you said the date there, that is going to be like perfectly timed between the end of the season and the start of the Euros. So if during that gap you need a football fix, then a night with Neil might be, sorry, an evening with Neil. A night with Neil sounds like something completely different. An evening with Neil Warnock would be a lovely way to spend it. And yeah, it sounds like a good show. Spoke to him briefly afterwards and he's really excited about the show. He's doing a number of dates. But yeah, Plough Lane is the closest, or likely most closest for a lot of Palace fans. So hopefully, after listening to that, a few of you will want to click the link and sign up.
I mean, to be honest, who knows where the evening will go afterwards? It might end up with a night with Neil. You know, in the salubrious, you know, venues of Southwest London. Who knows?
Tooting.
Exactly. <yeah.
laughs> The tiles of Tooting. But no, it was really fun, wasn't it, chatting with him? And I think we talked about a lot more than we maybe initially planned, and as ever with these interviews, the stories just kind of go from one way to another, and yeah, it was lovely, really, really nice. Particularly that first team that he had, obviously the 2014 team that situation that he kind of picked up was a difficult one, but yeah, that talking about the spell from 2007 to 2010 was great, and yeah, you could see he still has a lot of fondness for that time at Palace and some of those players that he managed.
Absolutely, yeah, that really came across. I should say a big shout out to Steve, who was Neil's agent, who set this up. And I think there's so much passion in Neil's general vibe, particularly for Palace. It's kind of, it's difficult not to be infected by that as when you're sat next to him. And then suddenly I'm thinking, oh yeah, that 2017 was good. And oh yeah, Victor Moses. And you're taken back to that time. And I think it'll probably be the same at the live show. And that was an eventful and quite exciting time to be a Palace fan for various reasons. And it was just nice to relive that with Neil and some great stories as well. And, you know, for a man in his later years and he's sharp as ever, entertaining as ever, exactly what you'd expect and more, I think, from this episode. And I think it'll be the same with the live show.
Yeah. Yeah. It was good. I just hope as ever with these interviews, that the listener enjoys them as much as we enjoyed recording it, because we had a good laugh with him as well. And he was an absolute gent as well. He gave us a little bit more time than perhaps was agreed. And when he left us, he was asked for autographs and yeah, didn't mind giving time to everyone that asked. And yeah, it was a nice afternoon spent with him. And yeah, I hope anyone that is that enjoyed that will consider going to the live show.
When he left, we're in the little booth, we left. Opened the door, he went out to get a breather or a cup of tea or water, whatever. And someone went, oh my God, it's Neil Warnock. Neil, can I have a photo? And he was like, yeah, no problem. Doesn't happen to us, Jack. We walked out straight into the bar. No one cared.
No, the best bit was somebody came up to me and went, who are you then? And I said who we were. And he was like, all right. And he just walked off. So clearly not the same market appeal as Neil Warnock.
And then Peter Crouch walked past us as we were having a drink afterwards. We just blend into the background, don't we, Jack?
That's what we need to do. We're not here to be the stars. We're here to guide the conversation. So, yeah, it was a good night just before Christmas. And I think he was off to somewhere to spend a lot of money on Christmas gifts, I think he said.
Did a big, I think he doubled up with a little bit of a Christmas shopping, as well. But he wished, it's nice, wished us the best and wished Palace the best. And I think, you know, of all the clubs he's managed, I think Palace holds a special place in his heart. And that really came across, certainly in our chat, and I hope it comes across in the interview, and I'm sure it will come across in the live show as well, which is almost exactly 6 months away, June the 8th of Saturday. That's wrong. Saturday the 8th of June. Neil Warnock, are you with me at Plough Lane, Southwest London? Tickets available right now. Go to agig.com. Jack, I'll see you next month for another interview special. Looking forward to it.
Got some exciting plans for 2024. That's all I'm going to say. I think, we've had some very nice feedback about this interview series, and that's given us the energy to keep it moving and see who else we can get on board for the rest of this season, and then hopefully into the second half of 2024. TBC. Indeed. TBC.
Massive thanks to Neil for giving up his time and his great stories. Massive thanks to his agent, Steve, as well, for setting it up. And thanks to you, Jack, for joining me. Thanks to our listeners for listening and for their feedback. And we'll see you again next month on this interview series. But until then, take care. We'll see you again soon.
Podcast Network.